If a player cleans his ball during play of a hole, except on the putting green, he shall incur a penalty of one stroke. That's a rule, Jerry.
But it's just a friendly game. Why do you always have to be such a stickler?
Because that's the way I was raised.
Welcome to Spirit of the Game, brought to you by the Colorado Golf Association and the CGA Dream Golf Vacation Raffle. You can win a trip for two to Northern Ireland to play the number one ranked course in the world, or Whistling Straits, or Southwest Florida, or Hammock Beach Golf Resort and Spa. Enter today at coloradogolf.org. Now here's your host, Ed Mate.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Spirit of the Game. It's another month, and it's another opportunity to talk to a special guest. I'm so excited, as I always am, to welcome in. This is a fun one for me. Go way, way back. Mark Crabtree, welcome to Spirit of the Game.
Thanks, Ed. It's neat to be with you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
So I can't imagine somebody listening and doesn't know the name Mark Crabtree, but maybe not everybody knows Mark Crabtree as well as I do. So let's start with your background in golf. I want to jump way ahead because there's so much ground to cover, but let's just start at the beginning. How did you get introduced to the game, your golf birth story?
I got started in the game because my father was a player. He played on the weekends, and I was fortunate enough that he invited me to come with him, obviously to pull the cart that he was having. And when he finished his round, he would go into the 19th hole, which I did not know what that was at that point in time. But he said, take a couple of clubs and you can do some chipping and putting around the putting green. And so I did that, and I started to accumulate a love for the game. And so he was really the one who introduced me to the game. My parents moved to Colorado when I was a youngster, and I grew up around a golf course, Collindale Golf Course, we all know in Fort Collins. And the longtime pro, Bill Mateer, kind of took me under his wing when I was young, told me to go out there and pick up those golf balls off that range. And if I could do that, then I could hit all the golf balls I wanted. So I was very fortunate that Bill took me under his wing, and I ended up spending a number of years at Collindale, worked for him. And that's how I really moved forward in the game, was practicing and playing right there at Collindale Golf Course.
Well, that's awesome. I'm turning off some of the sounds on my computer here. I realized I left everything open, so we don't want to be distracted. So, okay, so that was your golf birth story, but then how did you end up going on to college? Tell us about the Evans Scholarship and your golf career, how that
well,
in competitive golf in general.
Yeah. I certainly enjoyed the game and was motivated by the game. So during my high school days, I got fairly proficient at the game. And when I graduated from Rocky Mountain High School in 1974, my parents really didn't have the funds for me to go to college. So I looked around and I saw that the Evans Scholar Program was something that allowed caddies and players who enjoyed the game had a chance to go to college and be a part of that. So I signed up for and went through the program and obviously was accepted as an Evans Scholar. So that's how I got to the University of Colorado. At the same time, I knew the golf coach was Les Fowler, the longtime Les Fowler. And I asked him, I got a hold of him and asked him if I could consider being a walk-on on the team. And he said, well, show up for the qualifying at the beginning of the season, my freshman year, and we'll see how you do. And as I think you know the story, I went through the qualifying. I won the qualifying with all the returning players that they had on the team. So at the completion of the qualifying, Les put me on the team. And that's how I started my career. So I was fortunate enough to be both a scholarship athlete at CU and an Evans Scholar, which was a great honor to be a part of both of those.
Yeah, pretty unusual. There were others like you. I think Errol Miller, Tom Woodard, a few others. But who was on the team then? Who were some of the guys that you were competing against and playing with at CU at that time?
Well, obviously, Tom Woodard was my roommate and a good friend of mine, and he was a part of the team. Terry Call was a part of the team. Oh, golly. Mike Mulhern was a part of the team back then.
Did Steve Jones overlap with you?
Steve came in between my junior and senior year. So Steve and I were teammates for 1 year, got to know each other really well. And we played together for only 1 year, but obviously everybody knows what contributions Steve has made to both the school and the golf program and everywhere else.
So when Steve Jones arrived, did you think he was a special talent or was he just this kid from Yuma who needed work?
My first reaction was the latter. He was a tall, lanky guy from out there on the eastern slopes, had a golf swing that at that point in time would have been called dramatic because he slashed at it. And it was someone that, you know, you just on the outside didn't look like it was very polished at that time. But here's the story. He knew how to chip and putt. And if you know how to chip and putt in this game, you can score. And he always would tell me this. He said, my golf swing will evolve over time. It'll get better, Mark. But my short game will never leave me and it will keep me in the game. Now, I'm a senior at CU. I'm listening to this freshman. I'm really not believing this guy. Although, he, guess what? He ended up being 100% right. And to this day, when I think of Steve Jones, I think of those words that he shared with me. And I say, you know, we would drive out to practice together. And I tell the story, I would go hit balls for 80% of the time and I'd chip and putt 20% of the time. He would go out with us and he would chip and putt for 80% of the time and he would hit his golf swing 20% of the time. And let's look at the results.
About that. There's certainly a little lesson to be had. I know that we'll get to that in the next chapter of this chat when it comes to your career as a coach and kind of putting that in the file, so to speak. Okay. So before we move on to chapter two, which is your coaching career, which is long and pretty incredible. Talk about graduating, aspirations to play professionally, your amateur career as a player. Just shed some light on that period.
Well, during my college days, I obviously got the opportunity to compete for the team all 4 years, but there were a couple of summers there in 1974 and 1975 that kind of took me to another level. I competed in the state match play in 1974, and it happened to be at Collindale Golf Course. And I had a good week. I was fortunate enough to win the tournament. I defeated my good friend Tom Woodard in a 36-hole final. On the last hole, I was one up going into the 36th hole, and he hit it about 14 feet from the hole, and I hit it about 12 feet from the hole. And wouldn't you know it, that Tom would knock it in. So I'd have to knock that putt in to win. And fortunately, I don't know how I did it. You never know how those things happen. But the ball went in the hole and I won my first state amateur. So it was obviously a thrilling time being right there on my home golf course. Was able to repeat again in 1975 to defend and repeat again. So that was obviously a thrill. That was
Who did you beat in that one, in the final?
I beat Scott Lane, good friend of mine, who was a high school teammate. And we were playing at Boulder Country Club, as we talked about. So what a remembrance that was to be up in Boulder for 4 years and win at one time there at Boulder Country Club. So that was kind of during my collegiate days. I was fortunate enough to be successful around the state and winning some events and that sort of stuff. When I graduated, it's the idea of all of us to turn pro. So I turned pro and tried to compete. I first went down to what they call the J.C. Goosey Tour down in Florida back then. J.C. Goosey ran a mini tour type event. I went down there and played and had very moderate success, traveled to state opens like all of us do, and really went anywhere and anywhere, everywhere to try to play. And really over the course of that time, I really didn't quite have the success that I thought I would. And that's not unnormal for most of us at that time. If I had to reflect back on it, I'd have changed that principle. I would have spent more time chipping and putting and less time working on my golf swing. But in retrospect, it all worked out. And so I changed courses in terms of a profession. I got into teaching and coaching, and fortunately got employed up here. And my amateur career, my professional career was very short, but then my amateur career started up again. And I started competing again in the 80s in CGA events again. And fortunately, I was able to win a couple more state amateurs, one in the 80s and one in the 90s. So I pursued it pretty strongly during my coaching and teaching at the high school level, which, you know, allowed me 3 months to compete, 9 months to my job.
So you started out, as I recall, coaching high school golf. And then it take us from your through your coaching lineage all the way through the end.
Yeah, that's correct. When I first got my teaching and coaching job was at Fort Collins High School, where I had gone to school. And Arnold Torgerson was the golf coach then. And as I came on as a teacher there, he quickly asked me if I would be a part of his coaching tree right there at Fort Collins High School. So I got involved in golf, and I also got involved in basketball. And
let me pause you right there in that moment. Did you see yourself as a coach? I mean, that was kind of like, was that your first coaching job? And or is that something you really kind of had in the back of your mind, or were you like, coaching? Never thought of it.
Yeah, that's a great question. The answer to that is no. I never saw myself in the coaching profession. I helped out at Fort Collins High School and was a part of that because I enjoyed the game, because I liked working with young people. It was something that really satisfied who I was to help others with what I knew about the game. But to be so transparent, that never entered my mind that I would ever be doing that as a profession. And so, you know, I did that for a number of years while I taught and coached. And leading into that, I got a phone call one day from the administration over at Colorado State. And they had a lady by the name of Carol Ward, who many people in the Fort Collins area know, had decided to leave coaching CSU golf, which was a club sport only. And she had decided to leave to join the LPGA Tour in an administrative role. And so they called me and asked me if I'd be interested in helping the CSU. And they were transitioning from a club sport to a Division I sport. And so I ultimately made the decision to do that. But back to your question, didn't know anything about the coaching profession, how to coach, how to recruit, all of those things. I was raw. I was very, very raw. The only thing I knew was that I kind of knew how to play the game. But I didn't know anything else, and it took off from there.
So did you have to leave your teaching job at the high school when you took that? Did that become full-time right away?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. While I was, I ended up taking the CSU job, but I took it in conjunction with my teaching and coaching at the school.
Yeah.
So I was able to do both for a year. Interestingly, at the end of that year, the administration came to me and really suggested in a very strong manner that I pick one or the other. Because while I was teaching, they were replacing, you know, I was having to have somebody come in for me when I would leave to take the team on trips. And so they had to find a substitute for me, and they really were not that impressed with doing that. So after that 1 year, so I agreed to take a year off from the school district and do a sabbatical. And I did CSU for 1 year full time with the idea that when that finished, I was going to have to make a decision. Mm. So I went for a year. I did that. I fell in love with the CSU thing and beginning to understand a little bit about what coaching was all about. The year went by really fast. At the end of that year, I had to make a decision. And crazy as it might be, I left my secure teaching and coaching position at the high school to start a collegiate career coaching. And again, knew very little about it, but I reached out and said yes. And from there, it took off.
What year was that? that year?
It would have been 1989, 1990, that time frame. Right.
And at that point, was the golf program accredited, so to speak, or was it still a club sport at that point?
No, it had just transitioned from a club sport to a Division I sport at the university.
Okay.
The administration didn't have a good understanding of that. They'd added the program, but they really didn't kind of know what it took. So what that means is the finances were very bare.
Where's my next paycheck coming from?
So the compensation to the coach was very bare.
Uh-huh.
And the operating budget.
You must have a very understanding wife. That's all I can say.
Very fortunate. You're exactly right, like most of us.
Yeah. So what were the highlights of the CSU years? What stands out?
My first recruiting class. Well, you know, going a few years with no money and no finances. I had some friends who wrote some checks to get us started. But a few years into that, my first recruiting class, I'll never forget that. Tom Richardson, Scott Mendelson, Cam Osler.
Pretty good.
Three young players in the state of Colorado who made the amazing decision to come up to a startup program, trust me to develop the program and be a part of their collegiate career. I'll never forget those three young men because they made the decision to join the program, which had no history and no culture. But in retrospect, they are the ones that began to create it and cultivate it. And so I'm very grateful to Tommy and Cam and Scott for making that decision to come up to Fort Collins and be a part of the first recruiting scholarship group.
Amazing. All of whom are one type of state championship or another at some point. Match plays, mid-amateurs. What a great group of guys. I know all those names really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was something that I used in recruiting moving forward, that we recruited young men. And when I recruited them up here, I told them that it was a high expectation of mine that they could win the state amateur, one of the state amateurs in our state. And I used that, and they were examples of those who did that. So if you come here, that's kind of an expectation.
So how long were you at CSU?
I was there for 10 years.
Okay. Lots changed in that time. You took that program from zero to well-respected. And it seems like you started focusing on Colorado talent and the leap of faith that took that you just said. How did that 10-year period evolve and how did your recruiting change? And there's some pretty notable players that came through Fort Collins during that time.
Yeah. As we got evolved and got more into it, I was always of the concept that we wanted to recruit state kids first, regional kids second. And then if we could add in some others, we would do that. So that was our priorities. What I was fortunate about is I was able to, because we were becoming a little more notarized, I had a few international kids start to look at us. And I had a young man from Australia named Nigel Spence, who was looking to come to the United States. And he looked at three or four schools, and we happened to be one of them because of our progress. And ultimately, he chose us over the University of Houston, which was almost, blew me away. How could that possibly happen? But he liked what he saw. He liked the opportunity and those sorts of things. So I was able to add some international flavor to our program. Mike Katowski, another Colorado kid, was a kid up here who actually joined our team at some point. So we were heavy dosed with Colorado kids, but we supplemented with others and managed to bring them together. And each year over that 8, 9, 10 year period, we just got progressively better. And these kids, you know, they don't do that today, but they stayed for 4 years. They improved over a period of time. They grew as a team, culture got strong, and they really played for each other rather than themselves. And because of that, we had great success. And in 1999, we went to the first ever national championship, playing up at Hazeltine in Minneapolis.
Wow.
So Colorado State had never played in a national championship. So I think it was just a buildup over the years of getting a little bit better and the kids just buying in, and the program got a little more successful and we had some success, and it culminated in 99, making it to the national championship.
Was Martin Laird there during your tenure?
Actually, Martin Laird came in the fall. I had just left in July and he was coming in as an incoming freshman.
So you recruited him?
So yes, but
you can take full credit for Martin Laird.
No. There were other people that did that. There were others that did that.
Okay. Know. So I was quite surprised thinking of you as a homegrown and just what you did there and the legacy you were building at CSU to learn that you were leaving to go to, of all places, the University of Louisville. And that personally, very disappointed just because our friendship and seeing you every summer and really knowing how strongly you felt about recruiting Colorado kids. And I didn't know the next guy. And so what led to that decision to leave?
Well, 4 years prior to my leaving, Colorado State introduced a new athletic director to Colorado State. His name was Tom Jurich. He came from Flagstaff, Northern Arizona. And as Tom walked in to become the new AD, I quickly developed a strong relationship with him. He loved the sport of golf. He loved the connection between donors and community and the sport of golf. We hit it off really well, and he allowed me to take the program to the next level. And in 1999, he left Colorado State to go to the University of Louisville. He became the athletic director there. And so it was very quickly after he arrived that the golf program at Louisville was not where he wanted it. And so he reached out to me and asked me if I would consider being a part of his team there. And that's how I said yes. And that's how it was difficult. It was extremely difficult to leave. I loved Fort Collins. I loved the state. But I just felt that I might be able to take another program to the next level because he was going to allow me all the things I needed. But it was a very difficult decision. Obviously, family with Janie and I as well. We just, our first son was just born. So very challenging, but we made the decision and we moved 1,200 miles to the east.
All right. So you find this Colorado kid in the southeast and my goodness. So where was that program? How would you sort of, just as an opening question on this chapter, how would you compare ranking wise, where was Louisville and where was CSU? Were you walking into a richer culture? Because I would assume so in the southeast. But what was the state of the Louisville golf program when you came on?
No, that was one of those things that when I began to understand and I asked Tom a little bit about it, at that point in time, they were not as good as Colorado State was. They had a program. They'd had probably a little bit longer period of time, but very little success. And just a number of reasons for that. So in my conversations with Tom, we talked about how we could build what we wanted to build, how we would build it. And he says, you just need to do the same thing you did at Colorado State. You do the same thing there. I'm going to give you more resources to do that. You do the same thing. Your vision as it unfolds will allow us to be very successful. So I had two jobs in college coaching, CSU and Louisville, and the vision, the implementation, the execution was really very similar in both cases.
So what would be those similarities in a nutshell? What is your philosophy of coaching and developing a program?
Well, obviously, you want to recruit high-quality young people. You want to recruit people who are very passionate about the game. They're also people of character. They want to go to school. They want to get an education. They want to handle their perspective, although they're college age. You want them to be professionals in what they do and how they do it, how they approach people, how they connect with people, how they are motivated by the game, striving for excellence, want to be the best they can be. All of those were pillars of that. They had to fall into those categories. And so as I went out and identified those that kind of fit that, then I had to get them to understand that it was going to be something more than themselves over their 4-year period of time. It was we, not me. Not easy to do, but over a consistent basis, if you can teach young people that they can achieve more and greater by being part of a we team versus a me team, they're going to enjoy it much more. So we're able to identify the right players. I love developing players, Ed, so it's a great joy of mine to teach what I've learned and then bring them together in a group and create a very strong passion for success. And that's building it on it every single day. And so that was the game plan. Go out and identify great kids, bring them in, give them great opportunities, but work with them, you know, and be there, be beside them every day.
So just like I asked you about CSU, so you were in total how many years at Louisville?
21.
So 21, twice as long as CSU. Highlights player-wise. I know there's a kid named Matty Schmidt who's teeing it up as we speak in the Open Championship who came through Louisville. But tell us about some of the players that you worked with over that 21-year period.
Well, boy, that's a lot of players, but that's a lot of great young people. The head professional at Hurstbourne Country Club, where they just had the ISCO this last week, is a young man by the name of Danny Barron. And Danny Barron was part of my first teams there at Louisville. High quality young man, great player, injured a little bit, but you can see what he's done in golf as being a head professional at a club for a long period of time. There are a number of those, Chris Campbell and Danny Barron early on. I recruited all those years. In terms of players that have actually been able to be successful at the game, I recruited a couple of twins out of Florida, Derek Fathauer and Daryl Fathauer. Derek Fathauer actually won the PGA Tour qualifying school right after leaving school, back when they had tour school late in the fall, and he had a very successful tour career. A teammate of his that I recruited from Vancouver, British Columbia, most people would know, Adam Hadwin. And Adam's had a great career. He won one tournament on the PGA Tour, but he's been a part of the President's Cup team and a number of things. Very successful career, high quality kid. And then most recently, later on in my coaching career, Matty Schmidt, we recruited him from Germany, and what a great young man. And he's now embarking on a tour career, and he's, I think he's 66th right now in the FedEx Cup and playing, as you said, this week in the British Open. Played as an amateur and was a little amateur 3 years ago, so he's got a little experience there. But, it's very difficult to make it to be a professional athlete. But over those years, a lot of players that have gone on and are still in the game, whether they're a pro or playing or whatever it is. I recruited a number of international kids, so I have a number now playing out there on the DP World Tour.
So over the course of your many years in coaching, you've seen a tremendous amount of change, and most recently with NIL and the recent, and we'll get into this next part of our conversation with the U.S. National Development Program and Team Colorado, which you're intimately involved in. And you mentioned those players, and I hear a theme of foreign-born players. So how did it come to be, when you think back at your days at CU, that where you really, I don't imagine, had a lot of foreign-born players on college golf rosters, and now it's unbelievable, the number of foreign-born players. So explain to somebody who doesn't follow college golf as closely as I do, perhaps, why is that? Why are there so many foreign-born players on both men's and women's college golf rosters, particularly at the Division I level?
Well, I think that obviously at the collegiate level, more teams over a period of time, both men and women they continue to try to add value to the game, to their respective programs. And the game has become worldwide, obviously. And so what has transpired over a period of time is that coaches and programs have identified international kids as potential candidates for their programs, which they didn't do way back when. And so the door has opened up for them to come and participate. And in some cases, those athletes are coming from, you know, for example, Australia, they may be coming from national teams. So they've had teaching and coaching that might put some of them farther ahead in their game. So there's reasons why you might recruit an international kid, because they may come a little more prepared. They may come a little bit more motivated in some cases. And they just complement what you have in terms of a team. So if you can add some to it. And then we've just continued to see that evolve and grow and grow and grow. And now you have lots of programs in the United States that look for players to add that are international flavor. And it's happened so much on both sides, both the men's and the women's. So it's just evolved over time. It's just become what it is. And for those programs that are trying to get better and reach out, if they can find an international one that helps. That's kind of where the state is right now.
So you and I had chatted about this before, but the U.S. National Development Program's goal that USGA launched 2 years ago in Colorado was one of the first states to become a pilot state. And this is our first official year operating under the auspices of the National Development Program. And you were leading our effort in many ways here in Colorado with Team Colorado. And so before we get into that, kind of a segue question into that topic, it seems to me, and you can respond to this, that the quickest path, if the goal of that program is to encourage and develop American talent. So when you turn on the PGA Tour, the LPGA Tour, you see a lot more American flags on the leaderboard. Isn't the college golf on-ramp the best way to do it and the quickest way to do it? If we just made it easier and incentivize college coaches, again, I'm just saying, I'm not judging whether this is a good goal or a bad goal, but if the goal is to regain American dominance in the game, wouldn't that be a great way to do it? Just corner the market on college golf?
Absolutely. 100%. As we can impact these young people to get involved in the game, become motivated by the game, establish high levels of performance by teaching, coaching, connection, all those things. If we can surround them with all of that, there's no doubt that it will funnel up. Collegiate players will become better. As they leave college, they will funnel up and there'll be more of them. So the depth will grow and it'll be much more competitive. It'll be good for all of us. Absolutely. You're 100% correct.
So, you know, the other thing that I've learned in our conversations is there's more than just talent. When you recruit a college golfer, you're looking for, you know, I know this goes without saying, you're looking for the whole person, the student, the character, et cetera. But one of the things that I really had never really thought of until I've seen the U.S. National Development Program launch and see what you and our committee and our staff are doing with Team Colorado, it's developing the culture of team instead of you said we rather than me. And wow, is that is something I never even thought of as a pretty amazing byproduct of this, because if you know what it is as a high schooler to compete, not on your high school team, but among the best of the best in your area, what a great way to prepare you for college golf.
Absolutely. Obviously, two things come to mind. When you're around someone that's proficient like you are, they're going to bring a skill set that might show that they do something a little better than you. And when you surround yourselves with young people who you compliment them and they compliment you and you learn things, everybody gets better. And the second thing is the power of being part of a team is so satisfying to have success. Like I said, when a group accomplishes something, that is in many cases more powerful at that point in time in their life. Ultimately, if they go on to play professionals as an individual, but you can count countless times where even at the tour level, these guys talk about how they're the team camaraderie of a Ryder Cup, a Walker Cup, or whatever it is. It's so enjoyable and it's so satisfying to accomplish something, the power of us doing something. And we want to try to put that into that, into what we're doing with these young people and give them experiences so that they begin to taste that as well.
I would imagine that factored into your decision to in recruiting when you knew you had a Team Australia kid or a Team Norway kid or a Team Germany kid. That individual had already experienced the culture of team. And it seems like we're creating the same for Americans. And not to oversimplify this, but it's almost like the individual, the focus on the individual in this country created a selfishness and a myopic view of it's me against the world. It seems like that there's something there.
Yeah, I believe so. And the more that we can continue to create a culture where all of us make contributions, all of us do things to add value to the team, I think everybody wins. Now, obviously, we're countering some things, but that doesn't mean that that isn't our objective and our goal to try to do that. And I believe that we're making inroads in that. I believe that what's being created at the U.S. level and will sprinkle down through all of our states and into our coaching and into our young people is a great way to establish just what we talked about. And we all win when that happens.
So when you're asked, you're very involved, and we have the good fortune that your journey's brought you back to where it all started, and you're a giving person, and you've stepped in along with others to really take on this Team Colorado initiative. So if you're talking to somebody who's completely green, and tell me about what is Team Colorado? What is your answer? I know what mine would be, but I'm sure yours will be shorter.
Well, it's simply our opportunity to identify the best young players in our state, both boys and girls, and put an umbrella under them where they have a chance to be groomed, learn, grow about the game, be placed in a competitive environment, and begin to blossom their skills. And so we identify, and then we begin to put our arms around them and give them an opportunity to be in a setting where they're learning more about the game, they're learning more about themselves, and they are representing at the end of the day the state of Colorado. And that has to be emphasized to them. All that they do and say is they're under the umbrella, what's called Team Colorado, and they get the wonderful opportunity to represent themselves, the golfing community, but more importantly, our state of Colorado.
So we have 8 boys, 8 girls. We took them down to Arizona, wanted to build some team chemistry and camaraderie. What have you seen so far in its very early days? You've been in the early days of some other startups, CSU. What do you see happening so far? What are the early indicators?
Well, we haven't. Some of those young people have increased their buy-in to what they're trying to do. So their openness to being taught, their willingness to listen and learn from others about how to get better, our team, our coaching staff, so to speak, and the players around them, I've seen an increased desire in them to understand how to get better. And that's probably one of the greatest startups to see that, you know, and the great privilege of being a part of that, to recognize being a part of that. So it's been very positive. You never stop teaching. You never stop communicating and those sorts of things. And so I think, you know, we're very, like you said, we're very, very much on the start of this, but I've seen some real nice positive results. If you look at where some of them were a year ago and the competitions they've been so far this summer, you see improvement. Not improvement from, you know, improvement from the standpoint of their scores are getting better, their performances are getting better. And I think their enjoyment of the challenge is obvious.
So for the first time, you're I don't want to presume, but you're, I imagine, getting more experience working with young women and not young men. And I'm curious to know, with the 8 boys and 8 girls, what your experience has been and observations have been in the compare and contrast the two. How are the girls? How is it different?
Well, great question again. Here's one of the things that I have noticed is that the girls are much quicker to ask. They're much quicker to say, tell me what I'm doing here that I might be able to do a little bit better. The boys are not as quick to do that. Our challenge is to get them there, but there's no question that our young girls are so much more open. Not that the boys aren't, but they're so much more open to say, hey, is there something you see I'm doing that I could do a little bit better? And then that opens the door for the coach or some of our people to step in when they may ask the question. We can now step into their space and say, let's look at this. The challenge is always with boys over the entire my career was to get them to be a little more teachable, be a little bit more eager beaver to understand what they could do a little bit better. And I go back to one of my examples. You know, we talked about Maddie earlier. Maddie was probably one of the most teachable student athletes I ever had. I had a lot of them, but he probably stands out in terms of every day coming to practice saying, hey, what do we need to do to get better? So from the girls' standpoint, I've seen that. And they're just as competitive as the boys are. But with the boys, it's a little bit tougher. You have to figure out another way to try to speak into them. And again, you have to get in their space. They have to allow you to get into their space in order for you to do that a little bit.
So as we kind of wind down this chat, I have a couple more questions. Let's really low focus on Colorado. I've always felt that developing golf talent in Colorado is a challenge. Just because you're at altitude, just the same factors that make it tough for pitchers at Coors Field. I've often said, if you want to train for a marathon, do it in Colorado. If you want to train for golf, don't do it in Colorado. You've been in both environments. How big a factor is that? Am I making a mountain out of a molehill that we're playing in this rarefied air and the ball does not respond the way it does? And so it's this back and forth, not to mention it's just harder, it seems to me, when you go to sea level. How big a factor do you think that is in kind of stunting our potential growth as a state developing talent?
It's a significant factor. It truly is, because you play you play at sea level. It's different. You play on different kinds of grasses. It's different. So in order to, you know, to be from Colorado is a great honor to be from Colorado, but you have to travel around. You have to play on different surfaces. You have to play on different altitudes. All of those things help you to prepare to become as well-rounded as you can. But it is a challenge. It is a significant challenge. It's not something, though, that I believe should hold anybody back. You cannot use "I'm from Colorado" as an excuse. We have too many players that have done well. We have too many guys out there and gals who have accomplished great things who call Colorado home. So you cannot use that as an excuse, but it actually is more motivating than to go and be able to travel around and be able to do that in order to build an all-around type of program, or not all-around program, all-around game that can compete. So I would say use it as a plus, but then you've got to, you know, you've got to test everything else outside of the state.
Yeah. And again, this sort of straddles the whole gamut of our conversation. I asked Jennifer Kupcho, she came and spoke to at a dinner for our Junior America's Cup girls team. And it was pretty informal. It was a pretty intimate thing. It wasn't like there was 100 people. There was maybe 30 of us. And I said, so Jennifer, tell these young women what your thoughts are on where they should play their college golf. And she said, without hesitation, you got to leave. You got to get out of the state. And I was like, that's not the answer I wanted, Jennifer. I wanted you to say, stay here. We're all about loyalty to the Centennial State. And she's like, no, you got to. And so I think you probably agree with that. I mean, I know.
No, I don't totally agree with that. I can understand it. But let's say, for example, a young person growing up, you now have an opportunity to compete. You get a high level, you know, AJGA competition, USGA competition. You can travel all over the country. If you choose to play collegiate golf in the state of Colorado and you have a good schedule where it travels you 9, 10, 11, 12 times a year to different parts of the country, you're continuing to evolve your game as well. So that provides opportunities, both family-based and collegiately-based. So if you grew up in the state of Colorado and you could do all of those, I still think it's a nice place to be able to do that. And you can accomplish both. So I understand. Here's the other part of it, Ed. You know, people say, I'm going to go south because I'm going to practice 365 days a year. About 1% of all golfers that are ever get any good do that. They say it, but they don't do it. You know, so it's not where you're at. It's what you do and who is leading you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I heard that all the time. I'm not going to go to Colorado State to play golf. It's way too cold up there. And I'm going to go down to Phoenix or Tucson or wherever it might be. And I'm going to practice year round. They never practiced year round. And truth be known, if we put a camera on them, they did about the same amount as what Colorado.
Yeah. Came. That's funny. That is so, so true. Great answer though. And that makes me feel good because I can now not feel like I'm misleading. I mean, Jennifer's words have been ringing in my ears, and to say, no, you can. And that's a really good point. Just because you're on a roster in Colorado doesn't mean you're playing exclusively at Boulder Country Club or at Harmony Club. You're traveling, and you have to, if those programs are successful and you're are surrounded by other successful golfers and a good coaching team, man, that's really what matters.
Absolutely. You're 100% right.
Yeah, I'm right because I just repeated what you just said. So. All right, last question as we bump up against our sort of deadline, self-imposed deadline. The future. Boy, has the game changed. I mean, boy, has college golf changed and college sports with NIL and, of course, this national development program. You know, leave us with your thoughts on your crystal ball. What do you see in the next decade, for college golf specifically? And yeah, let's leave it at that. What do you see if you're listening to this and your future is all in front of you, you're looking forward to a life and a career in the sport. You aspire to play on the LPGA tour, the PGA tour, but you're thinking about college and beyond. What would be your, what is your vision for the future there?
Well, as far as the game goes, I would recommend or suggest that you keep your eyes on what is most important. And what's most important is surrounding yourself with the right people, getting the right tools that you need, continuing to be highly motivated, You know, they're influenced today by the NIL and the inducements and the financial arrangements and the transferability to be able to transfer from school to school. Although that's inevitable to many, I would recommend that you keep your eyes on what's most important. And that is being groomed by the right people, having the right levels of motivation, becoming the right type of personality that plays the game for the right reasons, and you demonstrate that. Let's not be influenced by all this outside stuff. Make a choice to go to the right place for the right reasons, and you become the best you can become. Ultimately, if you do those things, and we know what the resources are involved in the game, if you're successful, you're going to be financially rewarded. You're going to have all those things come to you. Today, they're laid out in front of you way too early, and it causes you to lose some perspective on the game. Let's not lose the perspective of the game and what the game brings to you and me, and what it will bring over a lifetime to those who are part of it. And that college career still should be and can be the greatest 4 years of one's life. And so let's not lose perspective of what that could be. I'm afraid that we are, and we're moving down that road a little bit more, but I would just hope that there would still be some that would see it for what it is. And, you know, as I said, Adam Hadwin and his dad drove 1,200 miles to go spend, you know, from Vancouver to spend 4 years at Louisville. And, you know, he still believes today it was some of the greatest days of his life.
Well, speaking of perspective, we've loved tapping into yours over the course of the last almost an hour. I didn't mention your Hall of Fame recognitions, not only in the state of Colorado and the Colorado Golf Hall of Fame, but in the College Coaches Hall of Fame. So what a privilege to be with you, Mark. You're a humble guy. You're a fount of wisdom. And I just love to call you a friend. So thanks for coming on.
Well, you're a dear friend of mine, too. And you've been leading that role for how many years?
25 years.
Congratulations. That's tremendous.
You know, the Louisville Golf Association has been calling me every other day, and I keep telling them no.
You've been a great leader and a great friend, and I so appreciate it, and the days to follow as well.
Thank you, Mark. Much appreciated. We'll do this again.
Okay, Ed. Thank you.
All right.